sleeps in the breeze of tonight. For 400 years he's lived with justice washed white. His crime was tradition, spoken with pride.
Webster's New World Dictionary defines Thanksgiving as an annual United States holiday observed on 4th Thursday of November as a day of giving thanks and feasting. It commemorates the Pilgrims' celebration of the Good Harvest of 1621. But some in this country find little or nothing to give thanks for. Leonard Peltier is one such person.
I'm Leonard Peltier. I'm a Chippewa, Sioux, and French Indian from North Dakota, Turtle Mountain Chippewa Reservation, which is my father's reservation. My mother is a Sioux from the Fort Totten Sioux Reservation, and I am now serving two consecutive life terms for first-degree murder in United States Penitentiary, Leavenworth, Kansas.
The incident for which he's serving time occurred on June 25, 1975, on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota.
I was living on the Pine Ridge Reservation that day. I was living on the Pine Ridge Reservation before that day. I lived on the Pine Ridge Reservation after that day. But we were there at the request of the chiefs and the elders again, who made a plea for help. They could not get no investigations into the terrorist and murderous acts committed by Dick Wilson's private police force. People were there. That's why AIM people was there.
What is the American Indian Movement, or AIM?
The American Indian Movement is an organization that was organized in 1968. It's an organization, a Native American organization that has been fighting for treaty rights, sovereign rights of Indian nations, discrimination, dual system of justice in the courtrooms, and fighting basically for human rights for Indian people. Well, we were calling for the total abolishment of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, because the Bureau of Indian Affairs at that time had total control over Indian people's lives. We were basically wards of the government. They controlled our lives to the extent where they not only told us what education we were going to receive, and our land, we couldn't lease it to who we wanted to without first getting the approval of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. We were working very hard to oppose them, to get them abolished. The Bureau of Indian Affairs, for years and years, has been nothing but disrupt and destroy Native American culture, reservations, and the corruption is abundant.
The man running the tribal council on the Pine Ridge Reservation was none other than Richard Dick Wilson. Peter Matheson, in his book In the Spirit of Crazy Horse, describes Wilson as a paunchy, pale-skinned man with dark glasses, a military haircut, and a heavy drinking habit, who was violently anti-AIM. Wilson's re-election to the Oglala Tribal Council in February of 1974 was declared invalid by the United States Commission on Civil Rights. Wilson simply dismissed the Civil Rights Commission as, quote, a bunch of hoodlums, and used his private police force to terrorize AIM members and their families. Indian term that describes Native American that helps white people is a scout or an apple, red on the outside, white on the inside.
When you oppress a nation, when you oppress a people, you will always have those that will, just to survive, to be able to feed their families, to be able to live relatively comfortable will turn against their own. We've seen this happen repeatedly through history. I mean, it's not just with Indian people, but it's through history. All races of people have experienced it. We know during the Holocaust that there was Jewish people that were security and helped with some of the atrocities committed in those camps.
Only one day before the shootout at Oglala between American Indian Movement and the FBI, Dick Wilson awarded a large piece of Indian land to the United States government in the northwestern section of the Pine Ridge Reservation. This act was unlawful due to the clause in the 1868 treaty, which stipulated that 3/4 of all the adult males had to approve any transfer of Lakota land. Leonard Peltier describes the importance of the 1868 treaty.
The importance of that is that the Black Hills, for one area, plus a large millions and millions of acres, was to belong to the Lakota, the Great Lakota Nation, the Great Sioux Nation. The government came in and annexed the Black Hills and millions of acres of land. And that was a total violation of the 1868 treaty, and this is why we are pushing so hard to get the 1868 treaty honored and get that land back to the people.
Can you name one treaty that the United States government has not broken with the Indians?
None whatsoever.
On the day of the shootout, Leonard Peltier was in camp, a distance away from the Jumping Bull Ranch where most of the AIM members were staying. How did you initially become aware of the two FBI agents on the reservation?
Well, when the shooting started.
Who started shooting first?
I believe they did. I believe they did. I wasn't there when the shooting first started, but I believe I was told by certain people that they started.
How long did the shooting last?
It started from approximately 10 or 11 o'clock that morning and lasted till 8:30, 9 o'clock that night. There was still shooting going on that night. In fact, it lasted even longer. The next day there was still gunfire going out in different areas. Different people were fighting with the FBI and other vigilante groups.
Why were those two FBI agents on the Pine Ridge Reservation that day?
Well, they said that they were there supposedly looking for Jimmy Eagle because he stole a pair of cowboy boots. But we have evidence from the Freedom of Information Act files that they were performing intelligence against our community. They were providing this with the goon squads. They were planning an attack on the Jumping Bull Ranch, plus a couple of other places where AIM people were concentrated. And they had planned on an assault on the place. We have testimony now from one of the leaders, the main leaders of the goon squads, Mr. Dwayne Brewer, who testifies on tape that he was provided with live ammunition, armored-piercing ammunition, sophisticated weaponry, and intelligence, and that they were planning on hitting the compound, or the ranch. I keep using their term, but the ranch. They had planned on assaulting the ranch.
Why do you believe they were after the ranch?
Well, because AIM people were there. American Indian Movement people were there.
June 75, Pine Ridge Reservation. Two FBI trespass Lakota Nation. Looking for trouble, they're only waiting outside. And trouble they brought some. They were pawns in a building. Stolen minerals and tools. They were sad.
based on the government intelligence that the reservation had become an armed camp. And fearful of the opposition, the BIA police, the FBI, the state police, and the goon squads loyal to Dick Wilson were in the area ready to crush militant activism of the American Indian movement. Why did AIM pursue stockpiling weapons and violence instead of using historical nonviolent success such as civil rights movement?
As we all know, or at least the people that don't know about Indian history, Indian people were not militaristic people before the Europeans came. And each time that the Indian people attempted to make peace, over 360 some treaties will contest to, violence was used against them. Every time Indian people complain or protest, violence is used against them. People within the Indian movement decided and took a position that they would no longer allow themselves or their people to be murdered, abused, and whatever, they would defend themselves.
During the shootout, one Indian man was killed and two FBI agents were wounded. The evidence suggests that as the government reinforcements closed in, both FBI men were then shot execution style at close range with a high-powered rifle. From your previous statements, we know your position, but for the record, did you kill those FBI agents?
No, I did not. I did not.
And what would you do as you stare into the face of the genocide of your people? Put yourself in the place of...
Since Leonard Peltier denies having killed the agents, I asked him if he has any knowledge of why these two FBI men were murdered.
There was nobody murdered. The only one that was murdered there was the Indian person. The Indian person. A federal judge himself has said that the FBI was just as responsible for what happened there as the Indians. So there was nobody. There was no FBI agents murdered there. But it was a war, and a war, there's no murders.
Do you know the man who killed those agents?
I'm not going to answer that question.
According to the book In the Spirit of Crazy Horse, its author Peter Matheson met with the man who claimed to be the killer of the agents. The meeting convinced Matheson that this Mr. X was telling the truth. I asked Leonard Peltier if he had personal commitment to this Mr. X, or was this some kind of an Indian code of silence?
Well, it's a code of silence to my nation.
Can you elaborate on that, please?
My nation. I mean, I'm not an Ollie Nort. I'm not a rat. I'm not a snitch. And I don't turn against my own nation. My nation was at war with the United States government, still is to some extent. And to commit treason against, to become a rat, a snitch, is to commit treason. And I have no intentions of doing that for nobody. If my life is to die here in prison, then that's what's going to happen. I'm going to die here.
Do you believe you can...
That's quite... should be quite simple for people to understand. We are not a nation of weak people. We, you know, the American society teaches you to tell on your brothers, your sisters, your mothers, and your fathers. That don't happen in the Indian world.
As the government attempted to secure the area, some of the Native American warriors fled the reservation. Amongst them was Leonard Peltier. Is it true that you were using a van in your escape that was registered to Marlon Brando?
It was registered in his name, but it did no longer belong to him.
He eventually made his way to Canada. I asked him why he left the United States if he was innocent.
It's quite obvious that Indian people can't get a fair trial around here in the United States anyway.
Even though the government could not identify the trigger man, the original indictment named four defendants on the charges of aiding and abetting in the killings of agents Kohler and Williams. By January of 1976, three were already in custody: Bob Rabideau, Daryl Butler, and Jimmy Eagle, with the fourth, Leonard Peltier, still at large. Daryl Butler and Bob Rabideau stood trial together and were acquitted by jury who believed they acted in self-defense on the charges of aiding and abetting. Few weeks later, the government dropped the charges against Jimmy Eagle. Leonard Peltier was put on the FBI's 10 most wanted list. I asked Leonard Peltier why he believes the FBI went after him.
Because I was the last one to go to court. They knew Jimmy Eagle wasn't even in the area, but yet they held the indictment and charges over him for over a year, and that I was the last possible chance for them to get a conviction. So we have documentation, Freedom of Information documents, where they say drop the charges against Jimmy Eagle and put the full weight of the American government behind the prosecution of Leonard Peltier. The government needs a conviction.
As a fugitive in Canada, Peltier was eventually apprehended on a tip that he believes came from one of his own people. Roger Clark, Secretary General of Amnesty International Canada, remembers the extradition hearings.
Well, as you know, the Leonard Peltier case goes back a long way. In fact, Amnesty was involved even as early as 1976-77. And at that time, if you will recall, Leonard Peltier fled to Canada, and there were held a series of extradition hearings in this country. In 1976, Amnesty International made its position clearly felt with regard to that case. First of all, that we felt strongly that within the United States that there was persecution and harassment by law enforcement agencies of leaders of the American Indian movement and other American Indian leaders. This was well established as a pattern, and we had observed it in other cases. And we felt at the time that Leonard Peltier was drawn into that same pattern. He was himself, as you know, a leading figure in the American Indian movement. And the fact that he was now being sought for his alleged involvement in the killing of the two FBI agents back in 1975 brought some of these issues to the fore. Now, we were also concerned at the time about the evidence that was being produced in support of that extradition. There were serious doubts about the nature of the evidence, and there, in fact, turned out that the evidence had been either suppressed or presented falsely by the FBI. Nevertheless, the extradition was upheld by the Canadian court, and Peltier was returned to the United States.
I was extradited from Canada on fabricated evidence. The United States government says prosecutors make statements saying that there was enough evidence to extradite me without the Myrtle Poor Bear affidavits. That is totally untrue. That is a lie. If it was true, why did they manufacture a witness? Why did they create a witness? They manufactured evidence to bring me back from Canada. They sophisticatedly kidnapped me using their judiciary system.
And the evidence they put in there was deliberately falsified. The government spends a lot of
Since Leonard Peltier claims the witnesses for the prosecution were manipulated into giving false testimony, I asked him what other evidence was used against him once he was brought to trial in the United States.
The so-called murder weapon, which they claimed was the most critical evidence against me, until that was proven it was fabricated. And in 1985, before the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, when the three-judge panel questioned the prosecutor to what was Mr. Peltier charged with, as we cannot find no evidence in the record of first
Peltier was convicted and sentenced to 2 life terms in a federal penitentiary. Roger Clark of Amnesty International.
Basically, our position has not changed since that time. We have maintained that the evidence used was not the appropriate evidence, that there were serious doubts that were raised in some of that evidence. And we have believed and still believe that justice would be served were Peltier to be given a new trial.
One of the key figures in Leonard Peltier's persecution was the well-connected future governor of South Dakota, William Janklow.
Peltier accuses Janklow of personal vendetta against the American Indians.
Well, not only me, not just me, I mean, personal vendetta against the American Indian movement. It was a tool used to advance his political career, and it's precisely what he did.
Leonard Peltier believes that William Janklow became the Attorney General and then the Governor of South Dakota based on his performance against American Indian movement. Peltier further accuses Janklow of a past history of anti-Indian conduct going back to as far as 1956.
See, here's the things but people don't understand or don't know about William Janklow. In 1956, Mr. Janklow was 16 years old. Him and his three other buddies picked up this Indian girl in Flandreau, South Dakota, which is where Flandreau Indian School is at. Took her out in the country, assaulted her, beat her up very, very bad, repeatedly raped her. He was arrested with his friends, and they were given a choice of either going to the reformatory or going into the military. He chose to go into the military. Later on, when he became, after he got out, and he went to law school and everything, became an attorney, he started working for the tribe, he again committed a rape against an Indian girl. One, this was brought to us by a 20-year-plus investigator of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, who was very, very upset because this case was covered up by the FBI. He was a well-qualified, very professional investigator. And we had him prosecuted in tribal court on that, and was convicted with the evidence. This was not evidence that the American Indian movement discovered, or anything. This was all done by the police. And because of that, he had a personal vendetta against the American Indian movement.
I've talked with William Janklow, who categorically denies these charges. He further said that he helped form American Indian Movement and to this day does legal help for the Indians free of charge. He said these charges were thoroughly investigated several times. When Gerald Ford nominated Janklow for the Legal Services Corporation Council, Senate ordered supplemental FBI investigation. Janklow says, investigators found these allegations untrue and unfounded. Janklow promised to send the copy of the Senate records to me since we had no time to obtain it before this broadcast. However, in a second instance, William Janklow worked as a lawyer for the Tribal Legal Services Program on the Rosebud Reservation. According to the book In the Spirit of Crazy Horse, this rape happened in January of 1967, while Janklow was the legal guardian of the alleged 15-year-old victim, Jensita Eagle Deer. According to the book, the alleged victim was taken to the hospital. The doctors verified that an attack had occurred. 6 weeks later, the FBI concluded that, quote, it was impossible to determine anything, that there was insufficient evidence, allegations were unfounded, end quote, and files on this matter to be closed. The case resurfaced in 1974. Janceda, now 22, testified again, and the tribal judge Mario Gonzalez disbarred William Janklow from practicing law on the Rosebud Reservation. Janklow denies the charges, and according to Mario Gonzalez, refused to appear in tribal court. Despite these accusations, William Janklow became the attorney general and then the governor, while Leonard Peltier went to prison.
And what would you do as you stare into the face of the genocide of your people? Put yourself in the place of Leonard Peltier. Oh, yes, oh. Leonard Peltier. And where is the justice for Leonard Peltier?
The other appeal is I have Senator Inouye and Congressman Don Edwards who are asking the President to grant me clemency or to mitigate my sentences. That's basically on hold until the court litigation is exhausted.
I asked Leonard about the present state of the American Indian movement.
We are now basically working in the political arena. We're concentrating on our economics, concentrating on getting certain laws passed to benefit Native people. And that's basically the area that the American Indian movement is working in today.
Is there a future for the movement through nonviolence?
Well, we certainly have been doing that for the last 10 years. We've been nonviolent for the last 10 years, showing again that we are a nonviolent organization, a nonviolent people.
I asked Peltier if sovereignty was another critical issue for the AIM struggle.
Well, yes, we are a sovereign nation of people and have our own forms of government. It's a to deny this, that this exists today, is totally false. But what forms would we take? Well, we would basically, we don't intend to set up borders. We don't intend to set up passports where you have to have a passport to leave the reservation. But we want our own self-determination and our own sovereignty to govern our own lives, which is what we're moving towards today. Numerous reservations are setting up their own legal systems, our own appeal courts, our own, we're setting it all up now. It is being organized. We're building our own economics, and we are slowly developing ourselves into a sovereign nation of people. But a lot of states, and even the President of the United States, Bush, has now made a public statement that the United States government will start dealing with Indian tribes from a nation-to-nation level. So we are making those gains, and we are moving in that direction.
But as far as going back to the old type of culture, the old days of riding horses and killing buffalo and sort of living in teepees, that's not what we're looking for. We know we have to modernize our societies, which is what we're doing. But we still can retain our culture and our identity and our Indianness is what we call it, and that is what we're striving for.
Since this is a Thanksgiving, I asked Leonard to comment on the origins of this holiday from a Native American perspective.
The origins of it was created by the Pilgrims, who were grateful for what the Indian people did for them. Showed them how to survive, showed them, fed them when they were hungry, and showed them how to become farmers. And in gratefulness, they created this thing called Thanksgiving. They had a big dinner for the Indians. So unfortunately for the Indians, over the years, we have nothing to celebrate on Thanksgiving. And many of us do not participate in Thanksgiving Day holiday. A lot of us fast. A lot of people be eating, but it's only because today, a lot of people are giving out free turkeys to the reservations and everything else. And this is a meal that comes once a year for them. So it's a time for them to get something to eat. And they'll eat the meal. A lot of us will not eat till the next day. We'll cook our free turkeys up and everything else the following day. But again, Indian people don't have anything to be grateful for. And all you have to do is just look at the programs the TV programs that have done shows on the reservations to see the conditions that is happening.
Meanwhile, after almost 16 years, Leonard Peltier remains in prison. I asked him if he is allowed to perform any of the Indian religious ceremonies.
I'm only allowed to perform the sweat lodge ceremony. Everything else, every other ceremonies are not allowed in prison.
And the evidence I put in there was the liberty for the fight. The government spends a lot of money.
Spends a lot of money.
Keep the red man quiet. He should say pray where he wants to pray, without asking permission. Where is the justice for Leonard?
Leonard's very excited about the recent support shown by the 55 United States senators and 60 members of the Canadian Parliament. They signed a friend of the court petition requesting a new trial. Alberta Megliore, Green Party's representative to the Italian Parliament, has put forth a resolution petitioning European Parliament to nominate Leonard Peltier for the 1992 Nobel Peace Prize. In the Soviet Union alone, 17 million signatures were collected to free Leonard Peltier. I asked Leonard if he wanted further help from the public.
I need people to write letters to the president asking for clemency, a letter of support to Senator Inouye in the Senate. I need financial help, which you can write to and send donations to the LEDC, Box 583, Lawrence, Kansas, 66044. Phone number is 913-842-5774. We have information that could be provided to you, sent to you, to give you more detailed information on what you can do to help.
In Leavenworth, a prisoner gets to use the phone only for 20 minutes, and our time was up long ago. We had to say quick goodbyes, and I thanked Leonard on behalf of St. Louis.
We hope to see you free very soon.
Thank you very much. And I would like to again tell your listeners that if at times I sound that I'm irritated or upset, I am. I'm upset at the person that's doing the interview or at you that's listening to me. I'm upset because of what happened to me and because of where I'm at.
Do you believe you are in jail solely for political reasons?
Yes, solely for political reasons. As I said, the government's been over 6 years now since the government has admitted they do not know what they have me in prison for, except that I was being a very good organizer and a strong advocate for Indian sovereignty.
A man who still awaits freedom, Leonard Peltier believes he is a political prisoner. Yet the phone privileges expire just like any other inmate at the United States Penitentiary in Leavenworth, Kansas.
All right, bro, I gotta go.
Leonard Peltier sleeps in a breeze on a blue night.
I don't know whether you've been following the Saddam Hussein of the United States, George Bush, but like Adolf Hitler, one of the first things he did to whip people up into a blind frenzy of ugly nationalism is make a real big stink about desecration of the national deity, excuse me, flag, in almost identical language to Hitler. Every day in school in America, I had to rise and pledge allegiance to the flag, even as the Vietnam War was going on across the street at the University of Colorado. And I was held over all afternoon in third grade to write over and over again, "I will not laugh during flag pledge. I will not laugh during flag pledge." And I haven't forgotten either. I pledge defiance to the flag of the United Snakes of Captivity and to the Republic for which it stands. I dip it in kerosene and stick it up the ass of you-know-who and light it. One nation under God or else. One nation under psychopathic Pentagon gangsters whose idea of national security is concentration camps for people who dare to use the drugs that the CIA brings in and the government supplies themselves. One nation under Wall Street. If the cops and the government are all crooks, I might as well be one too. One nation of sedated tabloid robots who actually believe what they see on TV, even on MTV. And when asked what they think about it, they reply, "I don't care." One nation drowning in its own garbage, indivisible from the fall of Rome, with liberty and justice for all who can't afford it. Burn, baby, burn. Burn, baby, burn. Old Glory, the Yankee swastika. Burn, baby, burn. Burn, baby, burn. Whenever I see you, I see red. Whenever I see you, I see red. If the communist countries can do it, why can't we? Throw the bastards out and try some real democracy. Run not by rich people, not by military people, not by sons of senators, sons of senators, sons of senators, sons. Have you noticed how the more they give people back their freedom over there, the more they take it away over here? So now, before it's too late to even talk about stuff like this, be a patriot, a good patriot, the one that cares about their country more than forcing people to worship a flag. And take the swastika, the Yankee swastika, and let it burn, 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 baby, burn!
Thank you. Global warming. Is the Earth heating up, or is it just coincidence that earthquakes, droughts, and floods are on the rise? No one knows how fast the Earth is warming or the consequences. Yet by continuing to load carbon dioxide into our air from cars and the destruction of forests, we are headed down a path of destruction. Many nations are beginning to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. The U.S. must follow suit, or else our children's future will be too hot to handle.
Greenpeace reports are produced by Greenpeace, 1436 U Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009.
You're listening to FM 88 KDHX St. Louis. It's time for Latin Rhythms. I'm Tony C. I'm filling in for Mario Roma, who's enjoying his Thanksgiving. I hope all of you